This is Bloomberg Daybreak for this Monday, August 20th, 2018. Coming up this hour,
global stocks gain as we begin a new trading week.
The lira weakens as Turkey's standoff with the U.S. continues.
A big name in fixed income warns about a record buildup in Treasury shorts.
And the world's biggest shipping company says trade tensions could hit the U.S. economy hardest.
President Trump's ex-lawyer Michael Cohen is reportedly being investigated for bank fraud for millions. Plus, why Trump attorney Rudy Giuliani says the truth is not the truth. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm Rob Buska. Ahead in sports, the Yankees sweep Toronto, but it was costly, while the Mets won big at the Little League Classic.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Bob Moon. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by USCF. Invest in what's real. Visit USCFinvestments.com. That's USCFinvestments.com.
And global stocks are gaining as we begin a new trading week, 5:01 on Wall Street. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are up 6 points, Dow futures up 62, NASDAQ futures up 26. The DAX in Germany is up 1%, CAC in Paris up 0.6%, so is the FTSE 100. Nikkei 225 in Japan fell 0.3%, while the Hang Seng in Hong Kong jumped 1.4%. 10-year Treasury, little change, yield 2.85%, yield on the 2-year 2.61%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.1% or 7 cents to $65.98 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.9%, up $10.70. cents to $11.94.90 an ounce. The euro at $1.1407. The yen 110.65. The Turkish lira at 6.1240. Bob.
And Karen, we begin with the latest on Turkey. According to the Wall Street Journal, the Trump administration rejected an effort by Turkey to tie the release of U.S. Pastor Andrew Brunson with relief for a Turkish bank facing fines. At the same time, Turkey is effectively hiking interest rates without action from the central bank. Bloomberg's Enda Curran explains.
What they're doing is forcing the banks to go via this overnight rate, which is a higher charge, effectively puts on 150 basis points on the cost of money. It's all part of a push by the policymakers to try and put some support under the lira, which has taken such a hammering. So it's kind of policymakers doing what they can with the hand that they're given.
President Erdogan doesn't want the central bank to formally raise rates because he believes higher interest rates fuel inflation. Turkish markets are closed for most of the week, which may mean low trading volumes and sharper currency swings than usual.
Central bankers gather later this week at the Kansas City Fed's annual economic policy symposium in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Bloomberg's Chris Condon reports.
The most likely newsmaker will be Fed Chair Jay Powell, who speaks on Friday. He'll be talking about monetary policy and the economy. Investors and other Fed watchers are very surely going to be looking for some guidance on where the Fed is headed with interest rates and its policy on the balance sheet. Other central bankers from around the world are sure to be there. They could also be making news in speeches or in sideline interviews. And last but not least, the official topic of the conference will be whether the size of big superstar firms like Amazon, Google, and Apple are beginning to hurt consumers and workers and the economy overall. In Washington, I'm Chris Condon, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Chris. A big name in fixed income is warning about a record buildup in Treasury shorts. Bloomberg's John Tucker is live with details. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Bob. Jeffrey Goodluck of Double Line Capital warns of a short squeeze as bets against 10- and 30-year Treasuries reach a high. Bearish investors would have to cover their bets if demand for U.S. bonds actually increases. As Gunlock puts it in a tweet, that could cause quite a squeeze. He's not alone. Nader Nami, head of dynamic markets at AMP Capital Investors, says it's amazing how far the market's shorting treasuries. Net short positions on 10-year treasuries from hedge funds hit the highest level on record, according to the latest data from the CFTC. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. Public hearings begin today to consider proposed U.S. levies on $200 billion of Chinese goods. The public comment period ends August 30th. The Trump administration can then formally announce the tariffs.
And economists are sounding sour notes on those tariffs. A National Association for Business Economic Survey shows 91% of respondents say they're having unfavorable impacts on the U.S. economy.
Meanwhile, the head of the world's biggest shipping company says the escalating trade war will hit the U.S. economy harder than it hurts the rest of the world. A.P. Moller Maersk CEO Søren Skou says it could slow U.S. annual trade growth by as much as 4%.
If the situation escalates and if we get to $200 or $500 billion worth of goods that are impacted between China and the U.S., of course it will have impact our business.
A.P. Moller Maersk transports about 20% of the world's seaborne consumer goods, putting CEO Søren Skou in a unique position to gauge the fallout of tariffs on trade flows.
In deal news, PepsiCo has agreed to buy SodaStream International for $3.2 billion. PepsiCo will pay $144 a share in cash for the Israeli at-home soft drink-making company, an 11% premium to Friday's closing price.
The focus on Tesla CEO Elon Musk shows no signs of slowing. Shares of the electric car maker fell 14% last week as questions emerged about the stability of its leader. And a couple of tweets yesterday show Musk has no plans to change anytime soon. Bloomberg's Sue Keenan has more.
Early Sunday morning, Arianna Huffington, she came out and said working 120-hour weeks doesn't leverage your unique qualities, it wastes them. She also said that this was a outrageous and horrific way for him to conduct himself at work. We then saw there was a tweet from Musk saying he had just gotten home at 2:30 in the morning and that it's not an option. He will continue this work style.
And this week, Musk and Tesla's board meet with their separate legal and financial teams amid inquiries from U.S. securities regulators.
On the earnings front, the parade of U.S. retail results continues this week, and Bloomberg's Jill Schneider has details.
Last week, Walmart posted its best results in a decade. Home Depot had a strong quarter. Earnings from Nordstrom beat estimates, but results from Macy's and JCPenney disappointed. This week, we hear from Kohl's, TJX, Target, The Gap, and home improvement retailer Lowe's. Bloomberg Intelligence says broad consumer confidence will likely support improved second quarter results for apparel retailers. Jill Schneider, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Jill, thank you. And S&P futures are up about 6 points this morning. Dow futures up 66 and NASDAQ futures up 26. The 10-year Treasury little changed, yield 2.85%. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. Now 5:07 on Wall Street. And let's get the latest at home and around the world now from Bloomberg's Michael Barr. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob. Federal authorities investigating whether President Trump's former personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, committed bank and tax fraud have their eye on more than $20 million in loans obtained by his taxi businesses. The New York Times reports that's according to people familiar with the matter. Investigators are also reportedly examining whether Cohen violated campaign finance laws. Truth isn't truth. That's from President Trump's lawyer Rudy Giuliani in discussing why having the president be interviewed by special counsel Robert Mueller for the probe into election interference isn't a good idea. Giuliani told NBC's Meet the Press, two people like Trump and former FBI Director James Comey are telling different versions of the same story.
I'm not going to be rushed into having him testify so that he gets trapped into perjury. And when you tell me that, you know, he should testify because he's going to tell the truth and he shouldn't worry, well, that's so silly because it's somebody's version of the truth, not the truth.
Giuliani said Mueller is desperate to find something to charge Trump with. Is the U.S. open to privatizing military operations in Afghanistan? White House National Security Advisor John Bolton was asked about the recent reports on ABC's This Week.
There are always a lot of discussions. I find them helpful. I'm always open to new ideas, but I'm not going to comment on what the thinking is. That'll ultimately be the president's decision.
Meanwhile, Afghan officials say government forces have freed 149 people, including women and children, who were abducted by the Taliban just hours earlier in northern Afghanistan. The Taliban ambushed a convoy of buses on a road in the Kunduz province. Shares of Atlantia are trading at a four-year low as Italy will press ahead with revoking the highway contract for the company that operated the ill-fated bridge in Genoa. Bloomberg's Kevin Costello is in Rome.
The operator's parent company, Atlantia, offered about 500 million euros as an initial aid package to those affected by the bridge collapse. Atlantia is controlled by Italy's powerful Benetton family, and the disaster has already hurt their reputation. In Rome, Kevin Costello, Bloomberg, Daybreak.
Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Bob.
Michael moves us along to 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for your Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, brought to you by Investors Bank. Good morning, Rob Buschka.
Good morning, Bob. The Yankees jumped on the Blue Jays starter, Ryan Barucki, early and often at the stadium.
Barucki deals, swung on, drilled it deep right. It is high, it is far, it is gone. It's a grand slam. It's bye-bye birdie in the right field seats. A grand slam. There he is, the Birdman of New York. He grand slams to right.
Barucki didn't make it out of the first inning. He threw 44 pitches, was tagged for 6 earned runs as New York swept Toronto with a 10-2 win on Sunday. Jay Happ improved to 14-6, allowing a pair of runs in 5 and a third innings. Didi Gregorius, the story, though, he was hospitalized following a collision at first base trying to beat out a single. He may head to the DL with a bruised heel, and he was replaced at shortstop by Gleyber Torres. New York is idle tonight, and they picked up a game on the Red Sox, who were shut out by the Rays. The Mets and Phillies met in baseball's annual Little League Classic from Williamsport, home of the Little League World Series. Mets win 8-2. Have a day, Amed Rosario.
And the first pitch. Swing and a drive, well hit to left. Hoskins going back, won't get it. It's in for a base hit. Around third, Plawecki, he'll score. Vargas stops at second as the throw comes into third.
Mets radio, Rosario was 3-for-5, batting leadoff. They welcome the Giants tonight. Derek Holland faces Zach Wheeler, who started his career with San Francisco. A's lost to the Astros, now lead the AL West by a game. Giants were swept in Cincinnati. And WNBA, the Liberty, fell to the Phoenix Mercury 96-85 in the season finale. Their 13th straight loss. That's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Bob?
Thanks, Rob Buschka. Well, the Knicks may be losers, but Madison Square Garden is doing a good job moving on. With the team failing to make the playoffs for a fifth consecutive season, MSG has turned to concerts and live events for growth. The once sports-centric business now reeling in favorable returns thanks to a $186 million in entertainment revenue for the quarter. This is Bloomberg. And the sports update brought to you by Investors Bank. Connect with the experts at Investors Bank with strong relationships and customized solutions. They work with your business every step of the way. Investors Bank, banking in your best interest. Member FDIC.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. In Asia today, most equities gained as traders hold on to hopes for an easing of the trade war. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally reports from Singapore.
The yen held near 110 to the dollar, sending Japanese stocks down, while markets in Hong Kong and China rose. The CSI 300 gained 1.2%, halting 5 days of declines, albeit amid thin trading volumes. The offshore yuan also steadied, following signs China may be propping up the currency as it prepares to restart trade negotiations with the United States, while the yuan traded onshore strengthened after a stronger fix from the PBOC. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Julia, thank you. Most European stocks following Asian shares higher. S&P futures are higher as well, up 5 points. Dow futures up 61. NASDAQ futures up 24. The DAX in Germany is up about 1%. 10-year Treasury up 1/32nd. Yield 2.85%. Yield on the 2-year 2.60%. NYMEX crude oil up less than 0.1%, up 4 cents to $65.95 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.9%, up $10.80 to $11.95 an ounce. The euro, $1.1407, the yen, 110.65, and the Turkish lira at 6.1165. And most Estee Lauder among companies scheduled to report earnings today. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. Federal authorities are investigating whether President Trump's former personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, committed bank and tax fraud involving more than $20 million in loans obtained by his taxi businesses. According to the New York Times, investigators are also examining whether Cohen violated campaign finance laws. Authorities in India's flood-ravaged tourist hub stepped up relief efforts amid the threat of the outbreak of waterborne diseases as nearly a million gathered in relief camps across the southern state of Kerala. The death toll has climbed to 341 since the monsoon started in June. In baseball, both the Yankees and Mets were winners. The Red Sox, Nationals, Orioles, A's, and Giants all lost. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Bob.
Thank you, Michael. Now 519, coming up on 520 on Wall Street, a varied week of contemplation ahead for investors. Central bankers gather in Jackson Hole, Wyoming for their annual policy summit. This after the Federal Reserve releases minutes from its July meeting at which officials left rates unchanged. And last but certainly not least, China and the U.S. each vowing to impose 25% tariffs on an additional $16 billion of imports. We're joined now live by Callum Pickering, senior economist for Berenberg. Good morning and welcome. Let me start with those Fed minutes coming out on Wednesday. What will you be looking for?
Well, we'll be looking for clarity as to whether or not the Fed will hike once or twice for the rest of this year. I think they'll probably go twice. The U.S. economy still has lots of momentum despite the rising global risks. I'd also keep in mind any discussion around U.S. potential growth rate. The Fed has the potential growth rate in the U.S. at around 1.8%, but this year, the U.S. can probably manage close to 3% annualized to the second half of the year. And still in wages and prices, you don't see much edging up yet. So in time, it's likely the Fed will raise its estimate of how fast the U.S. can grow without creating too much inflationary pressure. So I'd certainly be looking for that.
So you say twice more this year. There's been a lot of hand-wringing about the economy and whether it can tolerate something like that.
But the key trade-off for the Fed now versus, say, 4 years ago is whether or not it responds to the near-term risks by delaying a rate hike versus the risk of seeing inflation then creep up in a year or two's time. That trade-off is much harder now because there's very little slack in the U.S. economy. You have the strong domestic momentum on the private side. You have the additional stimulus from fiscal policy. If the Fed were simply to delay a rate hike now and the economy were to come strong through the second half of the year, the Fed might then think, we need to speed up the pace of rate hikes in 2019. So I think we'll probably get two hikes this year. Then the headline growth rate should slow a little in 2019, and the Fed can probably ease its pace of rate hikes to three hikes and then maybe two in 2020 before it finds the corridor at around 3.75 and decides that that's probably the rate the U.S. needs in order to keep it on an even keel.
Let me ask you this. Fed Chairman Jerome Powell speaks to the Jackson Hole Economic Policy Symposium on Friday. Is it better from the Fed standpoint to sort of keep things close to the vest or be more transparent about its pace and path?
Well, the Fed needs to be data dependent, and it's good when the market just knows what Fed policy depends on. You remember at the beginning of this year, the market sold off in January when U.S. wage growth surprised to the upside. Now, of course, the FOMC will have a number in their head that for wages, which means at that point, if wages exceed this number, then we're going to have to think about creating some unemployment in order to meet our inflation target. Now, I think there are some positive signs in the U.S. economy that wage growth is not creeping up quite as fast as anticipated as demand growth is accelerating, which means there's probably more supply potential left. If the Fed were to signal, say, that wages could creep towards 4% before it would begin to worry about inflation risks, that would keep the market calm. It would allow the Fed to gradually hike interest rates. And if we got a little upside surprise on the wage number, no one would fret too much. So that would be a key piece of data that if the Fed announced, it could actually get to a point where it can raise rates a little higher and a little faster and the market wouldn't panic too much.
We've got about 10 days of a comment period that starts today before the Trump administration can formally announce tariffs against China, but they start public hearings today. Do you think they'll be able to fend this off?
It's tough. This is the biggest downside risk to the global economy. So far, we are now almost 9 years into an upswing, and there's very little signs of inflationary pressure, which means central banks can continue to go slow, markets can enjoy steady growth with ample liquidity in markets. If you go down the line of trade wars, you're simply raising prices and squeezing real incomes, and you really kill that healthy economic story. With luck, China and the U.S. will come to some agreement. Maybe the U.S. will get some help from Europe in order to encourage China to just to lower its tariffs a little, introduce a few policies to manage the some intellectual property threat that I know that Washington is a little concerned about. Mm-hmm. But so far, it seems like tensions are escalating. But who knows? Mr. Trump has proven in the past he can go from war with a country to friends with a country in just a day. So let's see. There's some upside risk there.
Callum Pickering is senior economist for Berenberg. Thanks very much for your insights. S&P futures up 5 points at this hour. That is 0.2%. This is Bloomberg. Daybreak, brought to you by Willoughby's since 1898. New York City's boutique camera store for precision-crafted Hasselblad and Leica cameras, plus a full selection of GoPro action-adventure cameras. Willoughby's, corner of 5th Avenue and 35th Street.
Broadcasting live to New York, Bloomberg 1130, to Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 99.1, to Boston, Bloomberg 1061, to San Francisco, Bloomberg 960, to the country, Sirius XM Channel 119, and around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it is 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning to you. I'm Bob Moon.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures, European stocks, and Asian equities are all higher as traders hold on to hopes for an easing of the trade war. The onshore yuan is stronger amid signs China is propping up the currency as it prepares to restart trade negotiations with the U.S.
The Turkish lira is weaker, down 1.2% after a Wall Street Journal report the Trump administration rejected an effort by Turkey to tie the release of U.S. pastor Andrew Brunson with relief for a Turkish banking fine.
Hedge fund short positions on 10-year notes have hit the highest level on record, and Jeffrey Gundlach says that's setting traders up for pain. The Double Line Capital CEO warns it's raising the risk of a possible short squeeze.
On the economic front this week, the Federal Reserve issues minutes of this month's policy meeting on Wednesday. Bloomberg's Vinnie Del Giudice reports.
The Fed has tightened twice this year in an effort to prevent inflation from getting out of hand. The question on Wall Street, will we see one or two more rate hikes before the end of the year? Look to the minutes for context. Also on this week's economic calendar, data on the property market, existing home sales and new home sales. Rising interest rates could be putting a damper on demand. Vinnie Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Vinnie. Also this week, central bankers gather for the Kansas City Fed's annual economic policy symposium in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Fed Chairman Jay Powell speaks at the event on Friday.
In deal news, PepsiCo has agreed to buy SodaStream International for $3.2 billion. PepsiCo will pay $144 a share in cash for the Israeli at-home soft drink-making company.
Shares of Mulberry are down more than 15% in London. The clothing and accessory company is forecasting materially reduced profit for the year.
And Tesla's stock is down about 1% in early trading after last week's 14% slump. Tesla's board and CEO Elon Musk meet with their separate legal and financial teams this week amid inquiries from the U.S. securities regulators. Now let's get you up to date on how stocks are faring. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. And S&P futures are up 6 points. Dow futures up 65. NASDAQ futures up 27. The DAX in Germany is up 1%. 10-year Treasury up 1/32nd, yield 2.85%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.61%. NYMEX crude oil, little change at $65.92 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.9%, up $10.80 to $11.95 an ounce. The euro this morning is at $1.1405, the British pound $1.2738, and the yen at 110.65. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news, and this is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. Now 5:33 on Wall Street. Focus on President Trump's attorneys this morning. The latest from Bloomberg's Michael Barr. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob. Federal authorities are looking into more than $20 million in loans obtained by taxi businesses owned by ex-President Trump lawyer Michael Cohen. That's according to the New York Times. Investigators are looking into whether Cohen committed bank and tax fraud. President Trump says White House counsel Don McGahn isn't a rat like the Watergate-era White House attorney who turned on Richard Nixon. Trump sent a series of angry tweets denouncing a New York Times story. It says McGahn has been cooperating extensively with a special counsel team investigating Russian election meddling and potential collusion with Trump's Republican campaign. John Dean, White House counsel for the Nixon administration, has responded to President Trump's tweet calling him a rat.
I'm frankly delighted to be on his enemies list, if I've made it that far.
Trump's lawyer Rudy Giuliani told NBC's Meet the Press they're not concerned about McGahn's testimony.
We have a good sense, obviously, of what Mr. McGahn testified to. I can figure it out from...
How do you say that good sense? Have you debriefed him?
No, but Mr. Dowd has a good sense of it. He talked to them at the time.
So you don't know what Mr. McGahn... You don't know 100% of what he testified to Mr. Mueller?
I think that through John Dowd, we have a pretty good sense of it. And John Dowd yesterday said, I'll use his words rather than mine, that McGahn was a strong witness for the president. So I don't need to know much more about that.
Meanwhile, Giuliani says the truth isn't truth when discussing why having the president be interviewed by Special Counsel Mueller isn't a good idea. Giuliani says an interview wouldn't accomplish much because of the he said, she said nature of witnesses' recollections. By the way, NBC's Meet the Press can be heard right here on Bloomberg Radio. A report released by an advocacy group claims that some types of oat products contain unsafe levels of herbicide chemicals. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer is calling on the federal government to release their study, saying people need to know what they're eating.
We all eat cereal. Most of us use milk. Some of us use other things. But no one uses Roundup.
Last week, a jury at the Superior Court of California in San Francisco awarded $289 million in damages to a groundskeeper who attorneys argued that Roundup caused his cancer. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts from more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Bob.
Thank you, sir. Now 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for your Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, brought to you by Investors Bank. And good morning, Rob Bushka.
Good morning, Bob. It was a costly win for the Yankees as they swept the Blue Jays in the Bronx 10-2. Greg Bird touched them all with a first inning grand slam. New York never looked back, knocking out Ryan Barucki, who only retired two batters. Didi Gregorius, though, was involved in a collision at first base that landed him in the hospital with a bruised heel. He could be headed to the DL. Manager Aaron Boone still trying to stay positive.
Yeah, really, really happy with how we were able to come in with a focus this series, you know, especially falling down four runs in that first inning of the first game. And I thought we just had a lot of quality at bats up and down our lineup from a lot of different guys, a lot of people contributing.
Gleyber Torres picked up the slack and is expected to see more time at short. Jay Happ earned the win for the Yankees. They picked up a game on the Red Sox as Boston was shut out by Tampa Bay. Mets were involved in a special day, the annual Little League Classic from Williamsport. First, they watched the Little Leaguers play, then routed the Phillies 8-2. The game had sentimental meaning for Todd Frazier, who won the Little League World Series in 98. Michael Conforto, his teammate, played in it in 2004. New York returns to Citi Field to host the Giants and Derek Holland. Mets counter was Zach Wheeler, a former top Giants prospect. And a good sign for third baseman David Wright as he continues his long comeback. In a rehab game, he picked up two base hits. Elsewhere, the Astros beat the A's to regain the AL West by a game, and the Giants were swept in Cincinnati. And WNBA was the season finale for the Liberty, dropping their 13th in a row. They lost 96-85 to the Phoenix Mercury. That's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Bob?
Thank you, Rob Bushka. Now 5:37 on Wall Street. And the latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now with the cover story on how Tyson is looking beyond meat to protein grown in labs. Also in this week's issue, will Turkey's economic crisis spread to other emerging markets? Peter Coy wrote that story for Bloomberg Business Week.
To me, the impact is kind of more symbolic. Like, people look at Turkey and say, ooh, who's next? They right away look at Argentina,
right,
which is vulnerable and has a big history of poor economic management, even though the current president is actually doing a pretty good job.
You can read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now to access insights and analysis on the global stories that matter most. Now 5:38 on Wall Street. That is time for your Tri-State Business Report and our check-in with Bloomberg's Ed Corey. Good morning.
Hi, Bob. Foreign real estate investors are bullish on New York City apartments. Chinese buyers have been picking up multi-million-dollar condos on Fifth Avenue and Park Avenue, the Upper West Side, Tribeca, and Soho. According to Carol Armstrong, she's with DJK Residential. She tells CNBC buyers from Russia and the Middle East are also snapping up expensive properties. About 10,000 New Jersey seniors and their families should benefit from a bill Governor Phil Murphy signed into law Friday. The measure protects people who pay fees to continuing care retirement communities, or CCRCs, which include assisted living, independent living communities, and long-term care units. Connecticut shoppers get a tax break this week in time for back-to-school shopping. Connecticut's tax-free week began Sunday. It ends this coming Saturday. The break applies to clothing and shoes that cost up to $100. Savings also apply to online shopping. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Bob?
Ed, thanks very much. Now 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio's on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KRLD in Dallas. A Texas jury hit Toyota with a $242 million verdict on defective front seats.
I'm Andrew O'Day on 1010 Winds in New York. I'm talking about China's Anbang Insurance now looking to sell its full slate of U.S. hotels, including Manhattan's Essex House.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WCCO in Minneapolis, I'm reporting that a legal setback for Medtronic to avoid a tax bill may also have costly implications for other multinationals.
I'm Marcus Carlson on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're following shares in Mulberry as the luxury goods maker warns the collapse of a department store chain will take its toll.
I'm Joan Doniger telling KNX listeners in L.A. why Tesla's Elon Musk sees no option but to continue working at a relentless pace.
I'm Ed Corey on KFBK in Sacramento. I'm reporting Amazon is developing a new device that records live TV.
Thank you all, and those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. S&P futures up 5 points. That's 0.2%. Stay with us. We'll dig deeper in a moment into President Trump's suggestion the SEC should investigate a switch from quarterly earnings from U.S. companies to reporting results every 6 months. Coming up on Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks are following Asian equities higher as traders hold on to hopes for an easing of the trade war and ahead of a meeting of central bankers later in the week that may throw up clues on the outlook for markets. The dollar is edging higher, the euro falling. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are up 6 points, Dow futures up 71, NASDAQ futures up about 27. The DAX in Germany is up 1.1%. 10-year Treasury up 1/32nd, yield 2.85%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.60%. NYMEX crude oil, little changed, up 2 cents to $65.93 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.9%, up $10.60 to $11.94.80 an ounce. The euro, $1.1409, the yen, 110.66, and the Turkish lira at 6.0956. Estee Lauder among companies scheduled to report earnings today. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, jurors in Virginia go into their third day of deliberations today in the trial of Paul Manafort. The former Trump campaign chairman is facing 18 counts of bank and tax fraud related to work he did before joining the campaign. Unknown attackers fired shots at a security booth outside the U.S. Embassy in Turkey's capital early today, but U.S. officials said no one was hurt. Funeral services are being arranged for former U.N. Secretary General Kofi Annan. The Nobel Peace Prize winner died over the weekend at age 80. In baseball, both the Yankees and Mets were winners. The Red Sox, Nationals, Orioles, A's, and Giants all lost. Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Bob?
Thank you, Michael. Now 5:48 on Wall Street. Time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our platform offering informed perspectives on a range of global topics and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news. We're joined live now by Jennifer Ryan, Bloomberg Opinion editor in our London bureau. Jen, good morning. Julian Lee wonders why oil prices are down, but prices at the gas pump aren't. It wasn't really all that long ago that President Trump was tweeting that oil producers needed to increase supply. What's that done to the U.S. gas price?
Well, when President Trump made those tweets, the average premium gasoline price was heading up to $3.50 a gallon, and that was before the summer driving season really kicked in. But in response, crude prices reacted sharply, falling, but gas prices have eased only a little, and they're still remaining about at around $3.40 a gallon, and that's through the height of the summer driving season. What this means is that drivers looking at the highest summer gas prices in 4 years have started to pull back. And from the Department of Energy, you can see that year-on-year growth in gasoline demand has actually been slowing. And the outlook, and that means that the outlook isn't really very good.
Okay. If you're looking at the outlook for demand for oil, is the U.S. the only source of weakness?
It isn't, because when you look at fast-growing countries, especially in the emerging market, the stronger dollar has made oil even more expensive when converted into local currencies. Two places where you can really see this are China and India. In China, crude is down around 35% from a peak before the crash in 2014. But gasoline prices are back close to where they were at that time. In other words, Chinese drivers really haven't seen much of the full benefit of lower crude prices. Secondly, in India, drivers have been hit even harder, and gas prices are around 8% higher than they were in June 2014. This all doesn't bode well for global demand, given that India has actually recently overtaken China as the world's fastest-growing oil market.
So I want you to peer into your crystal barrel and tell me what this means for the outlook for oil prices going forward.
Well, look at it from the supply perspective. There's a lot to see that supply could be restrained. We're looking at renewed sanctions on Iran, the continuing slide in Venezuelan production capacity, and then there's the risks of stability in Libya. So this is all eroding the world's spare production capacity as well. But if you put that alongside cracks in demand, it looks like it's kind of hard to see how well oil prices are going to be underpinned looking forward.
Okay, Lionel Laurent says Britain's fat cats are about to lose their cream. He says that recent reports of a sharp increase in CEO pay in the UK are masking the real truth.
Yeah, the reports are from a think tank called the High Pay Center, and they are really quite shocking. So the UK's top 100 firms, CEO pay jumped by 23% between 2016 and 2017, with chief executives earning 145 times more than their average worker in 2017, up from 128 times in 2016. But if you dig into these figures, it's clear that they're really skewed by lopsided incentives at two companies, Homebuilder Persimmon and Melrose Industries. So if you strip them out, the increase in mean CEO pay is a much less generous 6%.
So why should CEOs be about to lose their cream, so to speak?
Well, it's a fair question, but the answer to this is a political one, because the traditionally pro-business Conservative Party is forcing companies to disclose and justify the ratio between the pay of their CEOs and their workforce. So if you've got the Conservatives looking at high CEO pay, you've got to start thinking that the good times are really going to be heading towards an end. On top of this, stocks in the FTSE 100 are increasingly volatile, and that gives investors even more reason to scrutinize where the rewards are landing.
Okay, so I would imagine, as it seems to with everything these days, Brexit must figure into this.
It does in an important way, because we've written before and you've heard before that the pound's weakness has been a boon for big international FTSE 100 firms, inflating the value of their overseas revenue. But domestic firms and their staff are finding life getting more expensive. So as we get closer to Brexit Day, if it looks like we're in for a very messy and very painful process, that could very well drive the British public into the arms of the Labour Party. And that would really be a case of the flush global firms feeling the pinch. And it could be a matter of the pressure really only just beginning.
Which is interesting, because the Brexit vote was in some ways set to change Britain's inequality problem.
You would have thought that it did, but the benefit that accrued to these global firms really was quite surprising. And so it's a bit surprising as well to see the inequality between CEO pay and workers' pay worsening. But Lionel Laurent's point is that with Brexit coming, it's really hard to see how that's going to last.
Jennifer Ryan in London, thank you very much. You can read more on this and other stories from Bloomberg Opinion at Bloomberg.com/opinion and on the Bloomberg Terminal by typing OPIN. Go. Karen.
Well, it's coming up to 5:54 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg Law Report. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Joan Doniger in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington newsroom.
National taxpayer advocate Nina Olson says companies that overpay an installment of the new transition tax on income accumulated overseas since 1986 should get a refund rather than a credit against future years. The Organization for International Investment says foreign companies might find Florida less attractive for investments if the state conforms to a new federal tax provision that limits how much interest businesses can deduct. And U.S. and Mexican negotiators will try again this week to put the finishing touches on a new NAFTA.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
Now, another legal news. Let's look at President Trump's Friday tweet saying he's asked the SEC to investigate a switch from quarterly earnings from U.S. companies to reporting results every 6 months. For more on this story, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks with Peggy Collins, the host of Bloomberg Finance and U.S. Investing News Team Leader.
So, Peggy, it seems natural that corporations would welcome 2 reports a year, but what are the dangers?
Well, a couple of the dangers are that investors have less transparency, right? So we've seen this in the news of late with Elon Musk saying he might take Tesla private. And one of the reactions that we've had from shareholders or shareholder activists is that, well, you're not getting as much information then in terms of what the company's earnings might be, what their executive pay is to influence whether you buy or sell. The other potential is that when companies are in the dark more, there's more potential for them to do nefarious things, such as insider trading, for example, and for it to be harder for people to spot, or for companies to be more worried about doing it in the first place because they might get caught.
So what are some of the less obvious advantages to corporations besides just not the extra work?
Well, I think, as you said, the extra work and also costs for smaller companies, a number of the complaints that we've heard is that with all the regulation today and the requirements from the SEC of reporting, that if you're a smaller company, that's a big burden. And therefore, there's more and more smaller companies that say, I'm not going to go public. I'm going to stay private because I don't want to have to do all those things. So that's one of the things. I think another point is that we've talked to some people who said it could make financial analysts more popular or valuable. Because they are supposed to be talking to companies regularly. And so if the public has information on a less frequent basis, the financial analysts who put out reports could become more important.
The SEC has been reticent to make changes. Where does it stand?
Well, the Trump tweet was surprising for a lot of us, including me. And so people have asked, you know, how quickly could they do something like this? My opinion is not very fast. Most regulatory items, and certainly something that would be such a sea change like this one, take a long time to go through. There's a lot of public comments and studies, and this might have to go through Congress. So I think it would take a while to happen.
And as Bloomberg Finance host and U.S. investing team leader Peggy Collins speaking with June Grasso, you can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio. And find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. S&P futures up 6.5 points this morning. Dow futures up 79 and NASDAQ futures up 28. 10-year Treasury up 1/32nd, yield 2.85%. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.